to the third case this morning, EEOC versus United Airlines. Ms. Sloan.
Good morning, Your Honors. Barbara Sloan for the EEOC. May it please the Court. The Commission is challenging the United's policy of not reassigning individuals as a reasonable accommodation, but instead requiring them to compete for jobs when there's no other possible accommodation that would enable them to remain in the workplace. The District Court dismissed the case, applying the stare decisis principles, in light of Hummus and Keeling. But
well, what can we do that we can try to persuade us of your point of view, but I don't see there's anything this panel can do to help you.
Well, we would urge the Court to circulate the decision in light of Rule 40, because this is the first time the Court has ever been asked to consider the conflict between Barnett and Hummus and Keeling. The Court can revisit and reconsider and overrule cases where
well,
the
we
reasoning...
Well, if we don't think there's any conflict, that's the end of the case.
But the Court has never confronted that. And, in fact, there are very good reasons why Barnett is inconsistent with Hummus and Keeling.
Well, this court actually did confront that in the Mays versus Principi case.
Well, Your Honor, the issue was not presented in Mays.
It was discussed in the opinion.
It was addressed
in a brief way.
Briefly, yes. In fact, defendant doesn't even defend the Mays decision. The parties never addressed it, and the decision came out pretty quickly after Barnett, and it doesn't really address the whole decision. It just equates seniority and a best qualified selection policy. We think if you read Barnett, it's pretty clear that what Barnett was saying is that reassignment, as a general rule, reassignment is a reasonable accommodation. It's presumptively reasonable on its face, ordinarily in the run of cases. That means normally it's going to be a request for reasonable accommodation, reassignment is going to be reasonable.
But in some cases it's not reasonable.
One exception that the Court accepted was very narrow for seniority systems. And we think that there are good reasons for distinguishing between seniority systems and best qualified selection policies. Seniority, and if you look at this Court's decision at Eccles, as well as Barnett, it seems like the Court was looking at a number of factors. One, that seniority is it's an objective, impersonal, uniform way of allocating cases, jobs. You know you're fifth in the seniority list. If numbers 1 through 4 didn't bid for the job, you get it if you're qualified. It's very predictable. If it encourages employees to invest in the company, to stay there now taking less with the expectation of more in the future. In many cases, an employee's right to a particular position is a right, which is legally enforceable in court or before the labor board. So there is an entitlement to a particular position. And in court, in fact, in Eccles, this Court said there's no such thing as a vacant position under some collective bargaining agreements. Very narrow exception. There aren't that many of them, to be honest, in real reality. There just aren't that many employers that have seniority systems.
Well, Barnett did more than just establish that understanding of what a reasonable accommodation is and a narrow exception to it. It established a sort of a framework for evaluating claims like this against disability-neutral employment rules.
Which would be seniority.
Do you disagree with that?
No. Seniority is the disability-neutral employment rule.
Right. And here the disability-neutral employment rule is qualifications.
Best qualified selection policy.
Right. So how would that Barnett framework apply here?
Well, the Barnett says reassignment is presumptively reasonable, ordinarily in the run of cases. The best qualified selection policy is so common that it would swallow the rule. It would make, in most cases, an individual, a request for reassignment would not be reasonable. You can't read Barnett and come to the conclusion that it intended the exception to swallow the rule. And I think defendant actually kind of concedes that Barnett is inconsistent with Hummest and Keeling because it cites the dissent in Barnett as affirmative authority for its position that Hummest and Keeling is still good law. The dissent in Hummest and Keeling said, you know, it followed, it tracks Hummest and Keeling in a number of ways. It says that an ADA is designed to eliminate workplace barriers that present, that employees can't overcome because of their disability. It rejects ACCA and EEOC and Smith. It says there's a right to a vacant position only if there's no obstacle, including a better qualified applicant. All of that is right on all fours with Thomas and Keeling, but it's the dissent. The majority says if there's a workplace policy, the employer may well have to make an exception to the policy to provide a reasonable accommodation, and reassignment is presumptively reasonable.
By presumptively reasonable, you would agree that the burden then shifts to the employer to show why it's unreasonable in that particular case.
I would.
So you acknowledge that aspect of the Barnett framework here, so it's not a sort of absolutist rule.
Right. The employer could, but I think if you look at the cases that have come out after Barnett, the courts haven't found lots of policies that, I mean, it has applied Barnett to a lot of different policies. Well, there aren't very many cases, but to the extent there are cases, it's applied them to a number of different policies. And it's concluded that the exception is really narrow, mostly seniority, not something as extensive as a best qualified selection policy. An employer could show in a specific circumstance that it would be unreasonable,
so
but not as a general policy, which is what United has.
Yeah, what remedy are you asking for here? Because this is not a case-specific litigation.
This is a motion to dismiss, Your Honor. We're asking to have our complaint reinstated on the grounds that Hummest and Keeling doesn't prevent us from proceeding.
With a challenge to the rule, a generic challenge to the rule. This is not a case-specific challenge. In other words, we don't have an individual plaintiff. Obviously.
Not right yet. I mean, we have some, but United has moved to dismiss. We have some individuals who have been injured by the policy, but we're challenging the policy as a whole.
So you want Mays and Hummest and Keeling wiped off the books?
Yes, and we think that would be a good result for someone like United, who's right now under conflicting obligations. It has Smith in the Tenth Circuit, where it has a hub. It has Hummest and Keeling in the Seventh Circuit, where it has a hub. So it's doing different things in the two circuits. The whole point of one of the big reasons why you would consider overruling a precedent is because a national employer like United is under conflicting obligations.
Well, our rule has been followed in the Eighth Circuit, too.
It has, but it's exactly followed, Your Honor. It says it followed. And I think it would be, this Court has recognized that one of the things that, even though overruling this Court's precedent might not eliminate a conflict in circuits, it might lessen it. It would lessen it here. And I think there's good reason to think that the Eighth Circuit might just go along with this court, as it did in the first place. I think if you count up the votes, there were only four judges in the Eighth Circuit who voted to not over, you know, who voted against, who voted against reconsidering Huber. And of course, the Supreme Court also was interested. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Counsel. Ms. Stillman.
May it please the Court. My name is Nina Stillman, and with me at counsel table is my co-counsel on this case, Karis Runnels. Your Honors, when all is said and done, the EEOC's position here is Seventh Circuit, you were wrong when you found against us in Humiston Keeling, and you remain being wrong in the post-Barnett decisions of Mays, Craig, and King. And by the way, the Eighth Circuit is also wrong, and it's only a copycat of the Seventh Circuit, and the EEOC even goes further to suggest that if the Seventh Circuit were to reverse its position on Humiston Keeling, that the Eighth Circuit would also follow. Your Honor, first of all, while there's very little record, because this went up on a motion to dismiss, there are certain things in the record that are significant here. United does maintain reasonable accommodation guidelines that, in fact, give disabled employees who need a transfer a preference over non-disabled employees. They are allowed to submit an unlimited number of applications. They are guaranteed an interview for a job for which they're minimally qualified, and they will get the job if they are equally qualified to a non-disabled candidate.
Is that consistent with Barnett?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm a little befuddled by Ms. Sloan's statement that we somehow rejected Barnett. Barnett is very significant here, Your Honor, because the EEOC's interpretation of Barnett has been rejected by every single court of appeals that has looked at the issue in the 9 years since Barnett came down, and in fact concluded that Barnett's majority decision bolstered the Humiston-Keeling issue. Indeed, that was the decision of this court in Mays, and that was the decision of the Eighth Circuit. And I would point out, Your Honor,
well, the Eighth Circuit did just follow along, using almost word for word identical language from one sentence.
Because it was such an excellent decision.
Yeah, but it was like one sentence.
Well,
our own decision dealt with this whole issue in a single sentence, maybe a paragraph.
It cites the bolsters language from Mays. But, Your Honors, the EEOC's position is that somehow the Seventh Circuit was not really capable of fully understanding Barnett because the parties didn't list it in their case.
Well, I read it a little less cynically. Okay, let's engage on Mays directly. Because it didn't really give a thorough treatment to the change in the law that Barnett worked here. It just said that Barnett supports what we have decided. Let's move on.
Your Honors, I have to believe that Barnett, which had just come down and apparently came down after the parties had filed their briefs in Mays, that this court found the Barnett case, read it, interpreted it, and considered it important enough on their own initiative to include it in its Mays analysis. As I say, I have to believe that the Seventh Circuit could read the Barnett case and came to a conclusion that its decision was important. I also think that the EEOC...
That doesn't sound like a ringing defense on the merits.
Your
we're going to give the court the benefit of having read the decision, which is, not the same thing as defending the decision on the merits. So maybe you could take a stab at that.
Absolutely, Your Honor. I think what's critical in Barnett is the clear statement that appears on page 397 of the decision. It says that the ADA, quote, requires preferences in the form of reasonable accommodations that are needed for those with disabilities to obtain the same workplace opportunities that those without disabilities automatically enjoy. The Supreme Court in Barnett did not say that such reasonable accommodation preferences should provide disabled employees with better workplace opportunities than their non-disabled employees, which is what the EEOC is asking for here. The EEOC, if we were to apply the EEOC's interpretation of Barnett, which in 9 years has never been adopted by any court of appeals, if we were to adopt that, you would have situations, for example.
Who has rejected it besides us and the Eighth Circuit?
Those are the only two courts that have addressed it, Your Honor.
We're talking in circles here.
Well, but nobody has adopted the EEOC's position, Your Honor.
Well, those to whom it has been presented have rejected it, and that means us and the Eighth Circuit, which just followed us. Right?
That's correct.
Okay. So let's get back to the merits of the EEOC's position. The Barnett case established a framework for evaluating accommodation claims, and in particular what the meaning of a reasonable accommodation is. And that framework also includes how, or the principle that the statutory requirement of a reasonable accommodation trumps disability-neutral employment rules in many circumstances. In that circumstance, the circumstance at issue in Barnett, the court found an exception, that the disability-neutral employment system, that is to say the seniority system at issue in Barnett, was sufficiently, stood sufficiently on its own to constitute an exception. But the general rule that the court laid down was that the reasonable accommodation requirement of the statute does trump generally applicable disability-neutral employment rules like, you know, the best qualified candidate gets the job.
Your Honor, first of all,
otherwise you would have, you know, as counsel for the EEOC has pointed out, the rule would be swallowed by its exceptions. If every, you know, qualification-oriented rule is entitled to a priority over the reasonable accommodation rule or entitled to prevail over the reasonable accommodation rule, no reasonable accommodation would ever be offered.
Your Honor, with all due respect, U.S. Airways' position in the Barnett case was that any disability-neutral rule prevailed. That's not United's position. And to the extent that Justice Scalia was referenced, that wasn't his position. In fact, he expressly states that the majority misinterpreted. United Airlines, this court in its Humiston, Keeling, and progeny, all accept that their reasonable accommodation is required and that a reassignment may be a reasonable accommodation. But the issue here is not the word reassignment. The issue here is reasonable. And what the Barnett's case said was that it broke out for seniority systems, and it said there may be on an individual case-by-case basis an exception that the parties may bring that would allow this individual to be reassigned even in the face of a seniority system. And what we are saying here is that this isn't that case. This is a nationwide class action. And effectively what the EEOC is doing here is not bringing up the limited exception, which the Supreme Court never articulated what that would be actually in Barnett, but it's asking effectively for a declaratory judgment that the United's policy be declared illegal and that Humiston, Keeling be reversed. And what we are saying, Your Honor, is that nobody is disputing that a preference, which is what was the issue and the language that has been focused on by the EEOC as well, is going to be allowed for a qualified disabled individual in the proper circumstances. And United, in fact, does give those preferences. Everything being equal, the individual who's disabled is going to get the job. But Barnett also said, Your Honor, that employees have expectations of consistent, uniform treatment. That's at page 404 of Barnett. And what we are saying here is the idea that seniority systems are so sacrosanct and that, to use the EEOC's term, policies where the most qualified person is selected is somehow, quote, garden variety, according to the EEOC.
United apparently doesn't adhere to the old Army saying that there are two methods of promotion, seniority and favoritism. How does that strike you?
Your Honor, I would say the record has no evidence of favoritism here. We believe, Your Honor, that the Humiston, nothing has compelled this court to overturn Humiston, Keeling, Mays, Craig, and King, and that we would request that the dismissal from below be affirmed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, how much time? 1 minute. Ms. Hall.
I wanted to agree with Judge Sykes that there is a framework here, that the employer has to, that normally the request for the accommodation is reasonable, the exception is narrow, normally just seniority, that if you're asking for a reasonable accommodation that's reasonable ordinarily or in the run of cases, yes, the burden flips to the employer to show that it's unreasonable or there's an undue hardship. The defendant's position is that that a request for accommodation is never reasonable if a better qualified a request for reassignment is never reasonable if a better qualified applicant exists. That is not a reassignment. And there's, as far as preferences, forget that. Let me just go to seniority. Seniority is different from a best qualified selection policy because a best qualified selection policy is not uniform. It is inherently discretionary, unlike a seniority system, and it will swallow the rule.
So it effectively makes the application of the Barnett framework impossible?
Well, there are probably in certain circumstances, Your Honor, there are situations where the employer could show that in this circumstance it would be unreasonable or an undue hardship to put this individual in this job. Remember, this is the accommodation of last resort. Only if there are no other ways that this individual can stay in the workplace do you get to reassignment. It's just not that. It's not going to arise very often. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. Case to be taken under advisement.